Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 103 in this series entitled The Four Worlds Part 2, A Four-Step Ladder Towards Inner Wholesomeness. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 23rd of Iyar 5760.
Conclusion of the 38th chapter. The Alter Rebbe explained that in the kavana, the passion, the meditation, and the concentration that should accompany each and every mitzvah, which constitutes the soul of the mitzvahs. In that kavana, there are generally speaking two levels, parallel to the two categories of souls existing in living beings, the soul of an animal and the soul of a human being. And the same in the kavana of the mitzvah, which is the soul of a mitzvah, there are two types of kavanas, in other words, two types of souls. The first is that kavana, which consists of a meditative passion, a meditative love and awe that is produced and is born as a result of man's meditation and contemplation, that reflects the volitional soul of the human being. And then there is the second category in kavana, which is tapping into the natural, intrinsic love and awe existing in the soul of the Jew, that parallels and reflects the instinctive soul of an animal. In chapter 39, the Alter Rebbe continued to explain the difference between souls and angels, expressed in the fact that the abode of the souls is in a world known as the world of Yetzirah, the world of formation, and the abode of the souls after 120 years is in the world of Bria, the world of creation. Because angels are compared to animals in the sense that their love towards Hashem is instinctive, and thus their abode is in the world of formation. Versus the higher souls who serve Hashem with a deeper transcendental meditative love and awe, their abode after they pass on is in the spiritual world of creation. He then continued to discuss those unique individuals, those extraordinary tzaddikim, whose abode after 120 years is in the highest of the worlds, the world of Atzilus, the world of intimacy. And now let's continue inside. In the middle of chapter 39, Lamates, on Daf Nun Gimel Amid Aleph, after the two dots, the line beginning, Vihine Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah. That's where we are up to. Yes.
You mentioned this idea of the meditative and the contemplative. Can I make an association the meditative and contemplative, let's say, relationship of indomitable, preparing and indomitable, as hooking up more with the awareness of Ava? And whereas the.
You're asking if the two types of love, the meditative and the intrinsic love, if they are reflected in our davening experience?
Yes.
We shall see today how that works. Yes, indeed.
And the second set we'll discuss. And also the years and the natural.
True. Zogdal Terebbe Vihine Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah. Now, the reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself, as our sages say in Pirkei Avos, in Perek Dalet and Mishnah Beis. Pirush, the meaning in this statement that the reward of the mitzvah of the that the reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah. The meaning of it is Shemischara Neda Muhuso Madrigasa. That we can know the essential nature and rank of the mitzvah by contemplating its reward. Which means Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, the reward of a mitzvah, is the mitzvah means that by knowing the schar of the mitzvah, you glean insight, you gain insight into the mitzvah. The schar, the reward of each mitzvah, tells us the story of the mitzvah. It reflects the mitzvah. By knowing what the schar is, we get to understand the essence, the content, and the quality of the mitzvah itself. Because, in light of what the Alter Rebbe has explained earlier in chapter 37, as well as earlier in this chapter, that schar mitzvah mitzvah also means that the schar, the reward, is a consequence of the mitzvah itself. It's not like the reward is something distinct and divorced from the mitzvah. Rather, every mitzvah creates a certain energy that returns to the human being and to the world in the form of the schar. So in light of that insight, we can understand that by contemplating and knowing the schar, we understand what the mitzvah is, because the schar reflects the nature of the mitzvah.
It's a hasoga of the yichud.
Why is that relevant here? The Alter Rebbe elaborated in the beginning of this chapter upon the reward that different souls receive for different types of services, whether it's the lower level of paradise, the world of Yetzirah, whether it's the higher level of paradise, the world of Bria. So that elaboration was not just an explanation concerning the nature of the various rewards. The Alter Rebbe is not primarily interested here in teaching us about the different rewards that different souls will receive after their life on this earth in the higher worlds. Rather, his elaborate discussion of the reward serves as a reference point that teaches us about the nature of their avoda, about the nature of their service. The fact that this soul receives reward in the world of Bria allows us to understand what is the nature of its work in our present physical world. The fact that this soul receives its reward in Yetzirah, Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, allows us to understand the nature of its spirituality and its service and its life in this world. And the same is true in the last area he discussed, that the fact that certain souls receive their reward in the world of Atzilus teaches us the nature of their service while they are living in this world. And here the Alter Rebbe immediately makes a very interesting comment. Now we will not concern ourselves with explaining hidden matters. Shehem tzaddikim hagdolim, meaning the great tzaddikim, shehem b'pchinas merkava, who are at the level of a chariot, whose divine service comes under the heading of hidden matters because it transcends understanding. Their abode is in the world of Atzilus, as he discussed earlier. We will not get into analyzing and contemplating the nature of their consciousness and their level while they are living in this world, because their avoda goes into the heading of hidden matters, nistaris. Rakan nigleslam, no, rather we will concern ourselves only with those matters revealed to us. Why? Shachareyim kaladim yimshech. Because these are the elements, the spiritual levels to which every man should aspire, and therefore we want to discuss them because they are relevant to our lives. Only with those levels of divine service, which may and ought to be attained by every Jew, that is what concerns us primarily. Leita ne'emana, that one must know with clarity. Mohus madreges avedas Hashem b'dechilu rechimu b'izgalus libay. The essential nature and rank of divine service performed with awe and love revealed in the heart, hanimshaches min habina v'das b'gdolos ein seif baruch hu, derived from understanding and knowledge of the awesomeness of the blessed Ein Sof. So one must know the essence of this type of service, which comes from meditation, from contemplation, mekayma b'yut sviris debriyah. Its place is in the 10 spheres of Bria. We learned before in the chapter, based on the works of Kabbalah, that the reward for the soul, the reward of the soul for this type of work, for this type of love, meditative love and awe that comes from contemplation, is that the soul continues to flourish and exist in the world of Bria, Gan Eden Elyon, and there it enjoys the irons of the divine energy existing and revealed in the 10 spheres, in the 10 divine emanations of that world. So since Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, from the reward we glean insight into the mitzvah, so this teaches us the essence of the Avodah of these souls. That their service, where is its place? Well, the neshama is still here in this world. The place of their service is in the 10 spheres of the world of Bria. On the other hand, the service motivated by natural reverence and love in one's mind, its place is in the 10 spheres of Yitzira. So from the various rewards, we understand the essential difference between the nature, the various natures of the avodah, of the work itself, which is relevant to our life here and now. When the soul is existing in this world, there is a new soul whose avodah, whose service exists and operates within the world of Bria. And then there is a soul whose avodah and life operates in the world of Yetzirah, depending if its service is energized and fueled by meditative love and awe, or it's energized and fueled by intrinsic natural love and awe. That's why he elaborated upon the reward, because that teaches us about the nature of the work, of the service, schar mitzvah mitzvah. Aval avayda b'li yisayrit ustchilu rechimu. But on the other hand, divine service performed without arousing one's awe and love, afilu b'meichai, not even in one's mind, v'b'chinis gilui, in an intellectually revealed state, the hainu meaning, wa'ayir ha'ava tivis ha'masoteres b'leif, to arouse the natural love hidden in one's heart, wa'itziya me'ahelen v'hester alef, so that it will emerge from the hidden recesses of the heart. El hagilui, to be revealed. Afilu b'meichai v'talo meisli be'akol panim, at least in one's conscious mind and in the latency of his heart, so that it might evoke, if not passionate fervor, at least a mental resolve to connect to Hashem by fulfilling the Torah and the mitzvahs. But here we are dealing with a human being in whose life this type of emotion does not exist. Never mind that he doesn't experience the meditative love and awe, but he doesn't even tap in to the hidden intrinsic natural love existing in the psyche of every Jew. Not only does he not arouse it and tap into it in a revealed, passionate way, but even in his mind, it doesn't even become an intellectual emotion that he becomes mentally aware of this hidden love, and that prompts his avodah. Rather, this Jew is doing the right thing, he's learning Torah and he's observing mitzvahs, but it doesn't have any of the passion, any of the kavana fueling it and energizing it. Rather, the The love of the Jew remains hidden in the heart as it is in its native state, as it was before the divine service, just as it was before the divine service, when it was not expressed in the divine service, now it's the same way. The love is totally not expressive in his work. There's no passion, not a revealed passionate fervor and zealousness, not even an intellectual passion. So why is he doing the mitzvahs? Why is he learning the Torah? He'll discuss soon the various reasons that may be motivating it. It might be out of habit, it might be out of rote, it might be because of certain egotistical calculations and so forth, but there is no divine consciousness fueling it, no divine emotion fueling it, and not even an awareness fueling it. In this case, his divine service remains below in this world of separation. Defined as the externality of the worlds. It doesn't have the power to rise, to ascend, and to be absorbed in Hashem's unity. Meaning the 10 holy emanations. This Aveda doesn't soar to the higher worlds. It remains stuck in Olam HaPirud, in the world of separation. As we shall see later in chapter 40, and this itself, there are various categories. Sometimes it ascends to the external world of formation of Yetzirah, not to the 10 spheres of Yetzirah, but to the external world of formation. And many times it remains stuck and bogged down in this world of Asiyah, in the world of action in the lowest world. But the bottom line is that in all of these cases, his Torah and his mitzvahs and his spiritual divine service remain in the universe of fragmentation. Versus the Aveda, which was fueled by instinctive love, which ascends to Yetzirah. And the Aveda, the service, the Torah and mitzvahs, that was fueled by meditative love, that ascends to the world of creation, to the world of Bria. And Alter Rebbe says, as it's written in Tikkuni Zohar, in Tikkun Yud, the Belay, the Chilur, Rechimule Parchalein, that without reverence and love, it does not soar upwards. One's Torah and mitzvahs does not go upwards. And it cannot rise and stand before Hashem.
When you say the Tchila and Rechimo, you're referring to the Avodah prior to the Tchila also? Or prior to the Tchila?
Rechimo.
Or also the Avodah, even, let's say, the day before. Somebody was, let's say, when he, whatever he's doing.
That's a good question. What happens if you have the Tchila Rechimo a day before and today you didn't have the Tchila Rechimo?
Well, no, but I mean, the idea is in order for...
The Alter Rebbe will discuss it at the conclusion of this chapter and continue the theme of chapter 40.
Does this include also just intellectual Dechilu Rechimu?
If there's intellectual Dechilu Rechimu, which means if you tap into it in an intellectual way, although your heart is not on fire, as discussed in earlier chapters, that there are two types of emotions. There are the revealed, zealous emotions, the bren, the fire, the revealed passion, and then there's the intellectual emotion, which means not a hypothetical theory, but rather an awareness that produces a commitment and a conviction that fuels behavior and prompts behavior.
That's parchalayla.
That's parchalayla. That soars upwards. Now here we return to the theme we began discussing last week at length.
Did you explain what the chiddur chimi? This is a big word. I mean, did you? Can you explain this?
Literally, the chilu is the Aramaic term for yira, or reverence, fear, and rechimu is the Aramaic term for love, ava. But we'll get into it more. The theme we began discussing at length last week, the four worlds, the four universes, as they are reflected in the human soul. The origin of the concept of the four worlds is in Kabbalah, and I discussed that last week at length. But what concerns us here this evening is how these four worlds are reflected and experienced in the microcosm within the Jew's consciousness. Which the point of this is one of the major themes the Alter Rebbe explains and conveys in this chapter. We began discussing the famous Medrash that in the ladder that Yaakov Avinu dreamt up in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, Sulam Mutzavar Tzavereshia Magia Hashamayim, and the ladder standing on earth, but its top reaching towards heaven. The Medrash says that that ladder consists of four rungs. According to the Megala Amukais and Yalkut Ruveni, discussed last week, these four rungs correspond to the four parts of davening, which the Arizal discusses at length, parallel the four worlds. The world of world of action, Asiya, the world of formation, Yetzirah, the world of Bria, the world of creation, and finally the highest universe, the world of intimacy, Atzilus. From the beginning of davening, Maida Anit Til Baruch Sha'amar, you climb the first step of the ladder, the world of action, from Baruch Sha'amar till after Yishtabach, the second step, the world of formation, the blessings preceding Shema and the Shema, the world of creation, and finally during the Shemaina Esther, the Jew encounters the world of intimacy, as the Alter Rebbe put it earlier in this chapter, that Shemaina Esther hi ba'atzilus. The Alter Rebbe himself used to daven each morning for 2 hours. From the beginning of davening till Baruch Sha'amar was a half an hour. From Baruch Sha'amar till after Shemaina Esther was 1 hour. And from after Shemaina Esther till the culmination of davening was another half an hour.
Took a while to get back there.
Now let's attempt to understand this a little bit and to identify with it in our personal lives, which will allow us to understand the soul and the true message of this Perek Lamedtes. We'll preface the explanation with a theme, an issue that seems irrelevant to the discussion at hand, but as we shall see, will prove to be very relevant. Everybody knows that in the Jewish tradition, there are three concepts. Concerning the laws of slavery, there is the Eved Knaini, the Eved Ivri, and the Amma Ivriya. Although we call them Avadim, which literally means slaves or bondsmen, nevertheless, from a practical point of view, if one studies the Torah's laws on these people, concerning these people, you can define them more as employees than as slaves in the well-known interpretation of what a slave means. The Eved Knaini, the Gentile bondsman or servant, is the non-Jewish human being who, for whatever reason, sells himself to a Jew to work for him. He becomes the property of the Jew. But as the Rambam puts it at the end of Hilchos Avadim, that the Chachamim HaRishayim, the early sages, would grant these servants from every single dish that they ate. If they ate from a dish, they made sure that these Havadim Knainim, their non-Jewish bondsmen, received part of it. Not only that, Zag the Rambam, Higdimu Su'udosam L'Sudas Atzma. They made sure that they ate the meal before the bondsmen ate the meal before they themselves ate the meal. The Rambam continues that you're not allowed to scream at him, you're not allowed to get angry at him, Yidaberi may benachas v'yishma ta'naisav. You have to communicate with him pleasantly and listen to him. Don't just talk, listen. Yishma ta'naisav. You have to listen to his point of view. Any other type of behavior he defines as achzarius and azus. Brutality and chutzpah. Vulgarity. This is the Eved Knaini, a non-Jewish slave who sells himself to a Jew. One second. Then there is the Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri is a Jewish servant. Why does he become a servant? Any of two alternatives. Either he has nothing to his name. The Rambam puts it, he doesn't even own a shirt. So in this situation, such a dire situation, he sells himself. He sells himself to a Jew, or the other option is he steals money from someone and he doesn't have the money to pay back. So Bezdin, the Jewish court, sells. Here, it's forbidden. It's not just the custom of the early sages. It's forbidden to eat anything if he will not partake in the meal. If you have one pillow, he must receive that pillow. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Afchav, Ne'amam, and Hilchas Avadim describe it and say, if you're purchasing a Jewish servant, you might as would have purchased a master for yourself. You're purchasing a master. The third scenario is the Amma Ivriya, which is the Jewish maidservant. Here, the father sells her to another Jew, and she works for that Jew as a maidservant. The only condition, the only scenario in which he's permitted to do that is not for his benefit, for her benefit. If he became so poor and poverty stricken that again he owns nothing, he doesn't even own a ksus, he doesn't even own a garment to dress in or to dress her in, he cannot earn a living to sustain himself, certainly not to sustain his daughter, then he's allowed to sell her to allow her to have a good life, a better life, and the moment he has money, he's obligated to redeem her from the master. Just as the Eved Ivri, after 6 years, she as well as he are liberated automatically. In her case, when she reaches puberty, 12, if her body goes through the various changes and so forth, she's also liberated. Furthermore, the only situation in which the Torah initially and lechatchila allows the father to sell her is if there's going to be what we call a yiyut. If the father sees an opportunity that she can marry the master's son or the master himself, then he's allowed to sell her, not only allowing her to have a wonderful material life, she'll have what to eat and drink and dress and so forth, but furthermore, it's possible she'll be able to get married there and live a happy and beautiful life. And if she agrees, if the girl agrees, the master or his son can enter into the covenant of marriage with her. If this possibility doesn't exist, the Torah defines it as betrayal of the daughter. This is known as the mitzvah of yiyut. Now all of this is irrelevant to our contemporary life because all of the laws of avadim, of servants, from the Torah point of view, existed only in the time when there was Yovel, when the Jubilee was being celebrated, which means when most of the Jewish nation lived in Eretz Yisrael, which excluded, for example, the time of the Second Commonwealth of the Second Beis Hamikdash. However, the Alter Rebbe once said a discourse beginning on the words of Parshas Mishpatim, "V'chiyim ker ishes bitei la'ama." If a person shall sell his daughter as a maidservant, and in a seldom moment and a unique expression, the Tzemach Tzedek, the Alter Rebbe's grandson, describes this discourse in his Sefer Eir HaTorah in Parshas Mishpatim. He says, "My grandfather said this discourse while living in Lyazhna, in the city of Lyazhna in White Russia, b'yamim harishayim, in the early days, v'hu dirush nichbad ma'ayit." It's a special discourse. It's a unique Hasidic essay, medaber b'madregis hanefesh zela ma'ilo mizeh, discussing the various levels of the soul, one beyond the other, v'hu mali muster haskel, filled with moral direction, v'hu me'inyin madreges tzadik v'rasha u'beinini amuskar v'tanya, describing the three levels of the tzadik, beinini, and rasha and the tanya. The contemporary Hasidic historians speculate that the Maimer was said in the year Tav Kuf Nun Ches, Shabbos Mishpatim Tav Kuf Nun Ches, which would be 1798, but it's unclear. There's no date on the discourse. The key point of the Alter Rebbe's discourse is as follows. The Gemara in Gittin Daf Yud Gimel describes the Eved as a human being who avda behefkeir nichale. The servant is a man who enjoys a promiscuous lifestyle. Hefkeir nichale. He will serve his master, but without true desire, fervor, and passion. His desire is hefkeiris, promiscuity, uninhibition, no rules, no boundaries, no restrictions whatsoever. It's just by nature of circumstances he's compelled or even coerced to serve faithfully his master. The spiritual counterpart of the Eved Knaini, Zogd Alter Rebbe, is as follows. Each one of us operates within a structure that consists of two souls. We have, of course, the animal soul seeking self-indulgence and self-gratification, and the divine soul seeking godliness and truth. The Eved Knaini is a description of that individual whose divine spark has not permeated his internal identity. Rather, she is relegated to the subconscious layers of his psyche. A spark of it, a revelation of it, may sometimes illuminate his inner consciousness, but the eye of the Eved Knaini is pervaded by the character of the animal soul. So you have a human being, and I'm sure some of us can relate to it, whose entire geshmak, what is his or her pleasure? What is his or her enjoyment in materialistic, self-indulgent elements of the physical world, not spirituality? This Jew generally does not feel the godliness within him, the transcendence within him, the divinity within him. He feels the animal within him. That is what defines his character. He suffers from all types of cravings and impulses and lusts and frustrations and alien thoughts each and every day of his life, living with battles and combats and wars and so forth. Nonetheless, he's an Eved. He's a servant. In his thought, in his speech, in his action, on a behavioral level, he serves Hashem. So he's an Eved Knaini. His eye is a Knaini. His eye is not permeated with the Jewish transcendental soul. In reality, he's an Eved, but his inner character is filled with another perception of reality. He seeks animalism. He seeks self-indulgence. That's why he's also called a Knaini. Another reason, Knan, comes from the word Hachna, Knia, surrender. He must surrender his inner identity towards Hashem. One of the Alter Rebbe's greatest chassidim was Reb Shmuel Munkus. I think I shared this with you once. The first time Reb Shmuel Munkus encountered the Alter Rebbe was during a late night in a Russian winter, which was freezing and ice cold, an unbearable cold. Reb Shmuel arrived in Lyazhna around 2 or 3 in the morning without knowing anybody, not having a home to sleep in. He decided that if the Alter Rebbe is a real Rebbe, he must not be sleeping, and thus the house in which the Alter Rebbe lived will be lit. Reb Shmuel was not a chassid, but nonetheless he was considered a very highly spiritual and pious human being, an extraordinary lamdan, a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, who has worked on himself diligently, but knew nothing about the Alter Rebbe and chassidus, Chabad, and so forth. So he decided Alter Rebbe is certainly up. So sure enough, he saw a home which was lit. He went, he knocks on the door. It's freezing cold. The Alter Rebbe himself comes and opens the door, which was obviously a seldom occurrence. Reb Shmuel recognized that it's the Alter Rebbe, and the first words the Alter Rebbe says is, "Was willst du? What do you want?" So Reb Shmuel says, "I would like to enter into your home." So the Alter Rebbe says, "There are many other Jewish homes where you can stay." So Reb Shmuel says, "But I want to stay in your home." So the Alter Rebbe says, "But I think that you can go to other homes." So Reb Shmuel says, "No, I want this home. Is das nicht kein jüdischer Stub? Isn't this not a Jewish home? You'll not allow a guest into your home." So the Alter Rebbe says, "I don't think you belong here. Please go to another home." So Reb Shmuel says no. So the Alter Rebbe says, if you don't leave on your own, v'lechrufin mein goy tzifat reibin der. I will summon my goy to send you away from this home. So Reb Shmuel broke down in tears. He began weeping and he said, Rebbe, mein goy is starker than dein goy. My goy is a lot more powerful than your goy. Alter Rebbe opened the door widely and said, come in. And he became one of his greatest chassidim. Now, obviously, the conversation was not a physical, brute conversation. It was a very powerfully spiritual conversation. And it's only when the Alter Rebbe heard that Reb Shmuel recognizes that mein goy is starker, I still have a powerful goy within me, that he said, okay, now you could come into my home. Versus many other spiritual homes and paths existing within Yiddishkeit. So this is the Jew who recognizes the fact that he has to deal with the Eved Knaini in him. He's torn. He's dichotomized. His consciousness does not see the world from the divine prism, from the divine point of view. It sees the world from an animalistic, egotistical point of view, and it responds to things in that way. This, the Tzemach Tzedek explains on the comments on this Maimer, includes on the lowest level, the Rosh of Tavloy and Tanya, who is the Jew who sins and then regrets the sins, but includes on the highest level even the Beinoni. Even the Beinoni, who may never sin, could nonetheless be defined as an Eved Knaini, being that his inner eye, his inner consciousness is pervaded primarily by his animal soul and not by his divine soul. So Tzemach Tzedek explains this is the deeper meaning in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Brachos Perek Beis that where Reb Gamliel's slave, where Reb Gamliel's servant Tavi died, Reb Gamliel kibbel alav tanchum, and after the burial, he treated him like a son or a daughter, and he went through the shura, the line to be comforted by the people who came to the funeral. So the students ask Reb Gamliel in Brachos, Loilim adetenu rabbeinu she'ein mekabel tanchum al avadim. Hasn't our Rebbe taught us that you don't sit Shiva, you don't receive Nichum Avelim, comfort and solace for a servant who passes away? Amalehem ein Tavi Avdi Kishar Kala Avadim Kashir Haya. My Tavi, my servant, is not like other servants. Kashir Haya. Zagdi Tzemach Tzedek, you can't say about a Beinani Avdi Befkeir Nichole. The real Beinani is Tavi Avdi. Tavi comes from the word Taiv. He always accesses the taiv, the goodness in his soul, kasher haya, even though he's, yes, dichotomized, experiencing a perpetual conflict and battle within his psyche. The next level is the Eved Ivri, the Jewish servant. His eye is pervaded by his Jewish soul, by his transcendence, by his divine soul, which means the personality and the psyche of the divine soul permeated his consciousness, and he does not enjoy the promiscuous lifestyle. This is the Jew who taps in to the spirituality existing within him, because as we know, the Alter Rebbe discussed at length, a Jew naturally loves spirituality. Just as a child naturally loves its father and loves its mother, to be sure, not every human being is in love with his father and in love with his mother. But that's unnatural. It's a tragic situation. It's a tragic situation when that occurs. Sometimes it may not be the child's fault. But when that happens, there are layers covering up his inner psyche, not allowing him to be in touch with his inner self. Now, he may not be able to rectify that situation always, but a wound remains. Because the natural, innermost state of every child is that you love your mother and you love your father. And the same is true about a Jew. A Yid naturally is in love with godliness. If he's truthful to himself, if he's loyal to himself, if he's in touch with the innermost design of his chemistry, he's in love with spirituality and godliness. And if not, there is a wound, there is a void. So the Eved Ivri discovers his love for spirituality, his essential yearning for transcendence, nafshi cholos avasecha, and becomes inspired. He's an inspired Yid. He's not just an Eved Knani, he's an Eved Ivri. His personality, his psyche, his day-to-day consciousness is pervaded by the Ivri, by the Nefesh Elikis. However, notwithstanding the Eved Ivri's depth and beauty, he never changes himself. He manages to cultivate and to tap in to pre-existing emotions. He manages to access his innate disposition towards godliness and spirituality and make it a compass in his life. It's awesome, it's powerful, it's beautiful, but it's still a very far cry of what man is capable of making of himself and of living life to the fullest. And there are two major issues that lack in the Eved Ivri's life. A, his animalistic feelings, emotions, and cravings still exist because he never changed himself. The structure of his soul remains as is. He didn't transform the very structure of his soul. He's dichotomized like every human being. It's just he's inspired. Which means the space of his animal soul or the chemicals of his body are filled with the inspirational energy of the divine soul. But the very stuff of the animal soul has not changed its stripes, has not changed its colors. Furthermore, even his positive emotions, even his godly aspirations, yearnings, and loves, and so forth, are defined by his identity. He can't lose himself in his love towards Hashem. He can't lose himself in his love towards another human being, because the whole feeling, the whole love, was created as a result of his identity. The feeling in his emotions of love, he can never transcend his identity. He can never soar beyond himself because the whole emotion is based on his identity. This is what an Eved is. One of the main tasks, traditional tasks of the Eved was going to the market, leaving the palace, leaving the mansion of his master, going out to the marketplace, purchasing everything that was needed for the family, whether it was meat, grain, flour, or all other foods and drinks, and bringing it into the home. Transferring its location from the marketplace into the home, which means the Eved Ivri doesn't effect a change in his substance. He changes the location. What he is. It's just what was previously outdoors is now indoors. The Eved Ivri didn't change himself, he discovered himself. He didn't recreate himself, he reoriented himself. What he is. Even the raw meat, he brings from outdoors, indoors. He takes his personality, and from an outdoors personality, which means an externally oriented personality, he brings it inside. That Mittler Rebbe and Derech Chaim puts it in Yiddish. He says, "The heart is raw, nish tibbege kept." His heart still remains raw. It wasn't transformed. What he is. The pre-existing divine emotions he encountered. The animal soul he brought in to a holy edifice. He filled it with inspiration of the divine soul, but he didn't change its substance. Here you have either a Beinoni on the highest level, discussed in chapter 13. The Beinoni who experiencing perpetual love towards Hashem. The Beinoni who's always in touch with his divine soul on an emotional level. Or even the Tzaddik Virala who still has Ra within him. Then you have the Am Ivriya. What was the traditional task of the Jewish, of the maidservant? She took the flour that the Eved brought into the home and made bread, fresh bread out of it. She took the raw meat that he brought from the marketplace and cooked it or roasted it in a fashion that it's now edible. It can be consumed by the human being. She doesn't only change the location of the food, she changes the very fabric and stuff of the food. spiritual in spiritual terms. The human being doesn't only become inspired with spirituality and godliness by finding and discovering and cultivating his pre-existing emotions. No. The Jew meditates and contemplates a truth, the truths of godliness that transcend his condition. And this meditation produces respective emotions. We know that a foundation in the Alter Rebbe's Chassidus is that real meditation and contemplation can give birth to emotions, can elicit and bring forth emotions reflecting this truth. Here you recreate yourself. That Amma Ivriya creates her emotions based on an ideal transcending her emotional subjective condition. The truth, and not her identity, is the barometer defining her emotional life. The Eved Ivri didn't have the courage to go and recreate himself. He had the courage to find out who he is. The Amma Ivriya, she doesn't only discover her inner emotions. She doesn't only bring them in from outdoors, indoors. She cooks the midos. She roasts the midos. She transforms their essence. She transcends herself totally. She leaves go of herself in an absolute way. She allows herself to experiencing the higher divine energy that transcends her and allow that to recreate you, becoming something much greater than yourself. Here, I don't experience you on my terms. I experience you on your terms. The Eved Ivri experiences Hashem on his terms, on his own terms. The Am Ivri experiences Hashem on Hashem's terms. The Am Ivri's emotions are not based on what was pre-existing in her psyche. They're based on a meditation of what is truth. She transcends herself in her meditation, and that produces the emotions. Here is where real life begins. As the Alter Rebbe put it in Lamed Ches, here you cease being a spiritual animal and you start becoming a spiritual human being. This is not Ava V'Yira Tivis, intrinsic natural love. This is Ava V'Yira Sichlis, transcendental love. A love that comes from a place beyond you. Here, the above disadvantages don't exist. Not only do you reveal your divine soul in this case, but you can change your animal soul. Which means the Amma Ivriya can liberate herself from a certain negative attribute that the Eved Ivri can never liberate himself from. Because she recreates her personality. She recreates her emotions based on a transcendental ideal. Furthermore, even her positive divine attributes are not confined to her identity. They were born from a truth that transcends her identity. Here you can totally lose yourself in the love. Here you experience the other person totally on his terms. It's far and beyond what the Eved Ivri can experience. Because the Eved Ivri's love was a consequence of his identity, so it could never go beyond his identity. On the other hand, the Amma Ivriya, her emotion, her love came from a place beyond her disposition, beyond her identity, even beyond her positive identity. Here there's real vulnerability, here there's real bonding, here there's real unity, far beyond what the Eved Ivri is capable of experiencing. And furthermore, as Chassidus points out, the Amma Ivriya can actually create a new emotion that wasn't even existing anymore. Because the emotions are based on a truth, not based on who I actually am. Nonetheless, you're still considered a maid. You're still considered an Amma. Because there's still a separation between me and Hashem. I'm experiencing truth on its terms, not on my terms. But there is still someone experiencing truth. There is a lover and a beloved one. There is a thou and there is I. And then there is Yiyud. When the Amma Ivriya enters into a marriage with the master or the master's son, she's transformed from a maid, from an Amma, into a bride, into a Kala. Kala from the term kilyoin, klois hanefesh, culmination. Yiyud from the term v'nayadati l'chashama, total intimacy, total union where there is no lover and beloved, where they merge into a seamless whole. Zagda Alter Rebbe, these four spiritual experiences come from the four worlds, because the four worlds essentially are four forms of consciousness. And here, open your minds and your hearts and your souls for a few moments. The cardinal truth of reality, according to the Alter Rebbe, is Hu Levadehu Ve'en Zolase, that there is Him, Hashem, and there is nothing else beside. As the Alter Rebbe put it in chapter 20, Atuhu Atshalay Nivra Ha'elam, Atuhu Mishin Nivra Ha'elam. You are the same before the world was created. You are the same after the world was created. Zakta Alter Rebbe, what does that mean? That nothing changed. Creation hasn't changed a thing. Creation hasn't introduced into existence any reality outside of Hashem. Just as pre-creation, it's obvious that Hashem was Yachid Meyuchad, the only existing thing, and there was nothing else outside of Him, the same condition exists, exactly the same post-creation. Now, what does this mean? Right now, I am sitting here discussing this. So are we laughing from somebody? This is a joke. But I'm sitting here and discussing it, and you're sitting here and listening to it. And there's a world, and there's you, and there's I, and we all have egos, and we all have needs, and there's life, and there's death, and there's horrific death, and so on and so forth, and everything else that goes on in this world. So the Alter Rebbe explained at length in chapter 20 and 21 and 22, 23, and then 33, 35, and we discussed this at length. That not only does the world, in truth, not have an ego of its own, autonomous, independent, and separated from its creator, not only does the world not have an identity, save the divine identity and energy that creates it, sustains it, fashions it, and designs it at every single moment, but furthermore, since the divine energy creating the universe is defined as a spoken word, and the word never left the speaker, and when the word is still included in the intimacy of the speaker, in the intimate presence of the speaker, the word has no presence, no reality, no significance, no identity of its own outside of the inner world of the speaker. It's totally included and submerged within the intimate presence of the speaker. So therefore, if you're in touch with what's going on, the Alter Rebbe says, if you tune into the program and you wake up and smell the coffee, you'll realize what is going on. That the spoken word, which constitutes the whole identity of the world, never left its speaker, and therefore the entire universe and all of the universes are totally included, submerged, and nullified within the intimate, all-pervading reality of Hashem. So if you're in touch with reality, if you want to know what's real, where is life happening, where are things playing itself out, there is nothing but Hashem. There is no significant reality to even talk about outside of that. And that's what the Alter Rebbe revolutionized, the idea of what Torah is, what mitzvah is. Torah and mitzvah means living a functional life, being in touch, getting tuned in with the beats. Leis asar panimine. So if you want to live, if you want to begin to live, any other definition of life or reality is an inaccurate, is a wrong definition from the perspective of the Alter Rebbe. If you want to live, get lost in the intimate reality of Hashem. And that's what Torah and Mitzvah is. This is the truth. The definition of a world, according to the Alter Rebbe, a world, the definition of a world, is a space a perception in which reality is experienced as an entity outside of Hashem's intimate presence. Thus, the etymology of the word world, Olam, is what? Helam. Opaqueness, concealment. Because the very definition of a world, describing an existence, is a perception that is born as a result of Hashem imposing myriads of veils, concealing the above-mentioned truth, concealing His all-pervading presence, allowing for self-consciousness to emerge. That concealment exists on myriads of levels, thus producing myriads of philosophies of what life is, and myriads of levels in self-consciousness. The stronger the veil, the more the world experiences separation and independence. Thus, four worlds. With each descending world, the perception of disunity and distinction and individuality and self-consciousness becomes increasingly greater. Atzilus is the description of the world as Hashem sees it. Atu atzalei nivra elam, atu mishin nivra elam, bereshis bara lekimus ashmai besharetz. Hashem created everything, the Alter Rebbe says, doesn't exist. Of course he knows everything that he created. He creates it every moment. Atzilus is the description of the world as Hashem sees it. The world, as it's seen through Hashem's prism, through Hashem's vantage point, that is what Atzilus is. So Atzilus, for example, has 10 spheres. 10 spheres are distinct personality modes that Hashem emanated from Himself, that all have a definition and are actually the infrastructure of the entire universe. But as the Alter Rebbe put it earlier in this chapter, the definition of the spheres of the divine emanations in Atzilus are what? Chabad shalein seif baruch hu miyuchadim shambay betachlis hayichud biyichud atzum v'nifla. The spheres are totally one with Hashem Himself, which means they are not felt or experienced as any identity outside of the intimate presence of Hashem. The word is seen there from the perspective of the speaker as it is included in its source. So although they exist in Atzilus, they don't have a reality that occupies any space. Iyu v'chayayichad is how the Zohar defines Atzilus. In Atzilus, he and his emanations are one. There is total unity between the word and the speaker. The truth of the world is evident in the world of Atzilus. That's how Hashem views the world. That's the definition of Atzilus. You get the point. Atzilus doesn't exist a billion light years away from here. Atzilus exists right here. This is the way you look at this mic and at this table. It's a dimension. It's a perspective. It's the way Hashem views this mic, this book, me, my ego, your ego, and this tape recorder. That's what Atzilus is. It's how Hashem sees the world. Without any veils. So you'll right away ask, the Alter Rebbe says there's a little tzimtzum in Atzilus. Because you're talking about a world. The very fact that you're talking about a world means there's a tzimtzum. Because in the intimacy of the speaker, you shouldn't even be speaking about the spoken word. The very fact you're talking about spheres and you're telling me they're one with Him means there is some level of tzimtzum, and that's why you call it a world. But it's not the tzimtzum that we attribute to the other world. It's totally on another level. This is the reality from Hashem's point of view. Perek Chaf and Chafal, of getting in touch with the quintessence of everything. Hu levadei hu ve'ein zulah, say, that is Atzilus. Bria is the world as it experiences itself as nothingness. In Atzilus, there's no one to experience the world as nothingness. In Bria, Hashem conceals, contracts His all-pervading presence enough to allow for creatures, so to speak, to emerge that will experience this truth of Ein Oid Mulvadai. But the very fact that they're experiencing indicates that there is an identity, a reality who's experiencing its own nothingness. In Atzilus, there's intimacy. In Bria, you're experiencing intimacy. In Atzilus, there's truth. In Bria, you're experiencing truth. And the experience of truth is not the truth. The map is not the territory. To be sure, as Chassidus puts it in one place, the previous Rebbe puts the describes Bria in these terms in a discourse, Ki Mitzia in Tavshin Vav, 1946. Since in Bria you experience your nothingness, you experience the nothingness of experience as well. But that itself is experienced. Bria consumes itself in its quest for nothingness, but there is a consumer consuming itself. Which means as follows, in the world of Bria, they know everything which is occurring in Atzilus. They know everything. The only problem is that they know it. That's the problem. That there's someone who knows it. So it's called Olam HaKiseh, the world of the throne, symbolizing that Hashem sits down. Now when you're sitting, you are lowered significantly. It's not your natural state. Your natural state, when you're erect, when you're straight up, your head is tall, that is limited and concealed when you're sitting down. It's not, there's a major tzimtzum. So there are spheres here. And what are these spheres experiencing themselves as nothingness? Because they know the truth that the word never left the speaker. But it's not Atzilus. That's why it's called Bria. What does Bria mean? Creation. Atzilus means closeness. Eitzel. Eitzel HaMizbeach, we discussed last week from the Pardes. In Atzilus, there's nothing outside of him. Atzilus experiences the world as Hashem experiences it, where there's really nothing outside of him. In Bria, you talk about a creation. Here, Hashem allows for self-consciousness to emerge. Now, what do we mean by self-consciousness? There's no ego in Bria. There's no ego even in Yetzirah. There's no ego in Bria. But the very definition of someone experiencing its nothingness is Bria. He creates something, which means he allows for a perception of something distinct of him. Even though its only perception is that it's nothing. That's why we spoke 2 weeks ago. The primary sphere of Atzilus is Chachma. The primary sphere of Bria is what? Bina. Ima ilam akanan abukersaya. Why? What's the difference between Chachma and Bina, if you remember? This is all different between Chachma and Bina. Bina knows everything that Chachma knows. Bina is comprehension, and Chachma is conception. The difference is, in Chachma, the intellectual eye doesn't exist, and the concept emerges. The concept pervades my space. In Bina, I comprehend the concept.